Good morning, early birds. You've caught the Weekend Worm, a special edition that recaps the top stories of the week, kind of a heads up on what we might be following in the upcoming weeks. It is the second weekend of May 2026, Saturday the 9th and Sunday the 10th. I'm Carl Lingle, your host. It is a midterm election year, and Montana's primary election is Tuesday, June 2nd. Yellowstone Public Radio and Montana Public Radio are working to share profiles on candidates running for federal office in 2026. Our interviews began a few weeks back, Monday, April 13th, actually. We run them at 7:44 in the morning during Morning Edition, and again at 5:44 during All Things Considered. This past week, we heard from U.S. Senate Democratic candidates Alani Bankhead, Michael Hummert, and Riley Neal, and Libertarian candidates Tom Jandron and Kyle Austin. You can hear these interviews online at ypradio.org. You can also hear them as part of the Daily Worm podcast. From the latest National Weather Service discussion on the region's weather, a quick-moving wave cutting through the upper level ridge across the Pacific Northwest and northern Rockies should result in increased coverage of showers and thunderstorms. Showers continue Saturday before slowly subsiding later today. A drier and warmer stretch will develop Sunday as upper level ridging builds in once again. This largely continues through much of next week, though there will be several attempts to break down the ridge. The first looks to be on Monday. A wave progresses eastward near the Canadian border. That'll begin late Sunday night. Breezy winds will be favored near the Canadian border as that wave passes by during the day Monday. A few showers near the Canadian border cannot be completely ruled out Monday as the wave moves through. And as the weather is warming up, bears are emerging from the winter dens, and there have already been several incidents, including a fatality. We'll start with a male grizzly bear that was moved for dining on cattle in northwest Wyoming early this week. The adult male grizzly was captured for cattle depredation on private land in Park County, Wyoming, relocated to the Wiggins Fork Drainage some 19 miles north of DuBose, Wyoming. That relocation was done by Wyoming Game and Fish in cooperation with U.S. Fish and Game Service and the Shoshone National Forest. Game and Fish is required to update the public whenever a grizzly bear is relocated in accordance with state and federal law and regulation. Grizzly bear relocation is a management tool large carnivore biologists use to minimize conflicts between humans and grizzlies. On Monday, we heard of an incident in Yellowstone National Park. Two male hikers, identified on multiple social media sites as brothers from Texas, are recovering at the Eastern Idaho Regional Medical Center in Idaho Falls after being mauled by at least one grizzly bear on May 4th. The attack happened on the Mystic Falls Trail near Old Faithful in Yellowstone National Park. Another hiker on the trail found the severely injured older brother and was able to contact emergency responders who provided aid before the brothers were transported from the area by helicopter. In a Thursday news release, park officials believe a female grizzly bear and two or three young cubs were involved in the encounter. Park officials are keeping a temporary closure in place for a trail, backcountry campsite, and fishing northwest of the Old Faithful area as they continue the investigation. Another incident surfaced last weekend with a missing hiker Sunday evening in Glacier National Park. Montana Public Radio's Edward O'Brien has the unfortunate outcome.
According to a Glacier National Park press release, the victim was located about 2.5 miles up the Mount Brown Trail on the park's west side. He was approximately 50 feet off the trail in a densely wooded area with downed timber. Park officials say the injuries are consistent with those sustained by a bear attack. Search and rescue crews found the body at about noon Wednesday. The National Park Service is withholding the identity of the victim until next of kin notification. That investigation is ongoing. All trails originating from the Sperry Trailhead at the Lake McDonald Lodge to Mount Brown, Snyder Lake, Sperry Chalet, and the Lincoln Lake Trail Junction are now closed. The Lincoln Lake Trail from the Snyder Ridge Trail Junction to Lincoln Lake is also closed. The park's last human fatality caused by a bear was in 1998 in the Two Medicine Valley on Glacier's east side. Reporting from Missoula, I'm Edward O'Brien.
A county attorney in south central Montana is going to the Supreme Court over privacy laws and federal immigration enforcement. Gallatin County Attorney Audrey Cromwell filed a petition a day after Attorney General Austin Knutson announced supervisory control of her office. The disagreement goes back to immigration enforcement at the county level. Knutson is calling for counties to follow state law by cooperating with federal immigration agencies in all requests for information. Cromwell's office denied a request from ICE in October. She cites privacy laws for refusing. Cromwell is asking the Supreme Court to determine whether counties can give confidential information to federal immigration enforcement for non-criminal or administrative purposes without first getting a court order. She's also asking the court to dismiss Knutson's supervisory control of her office. A Supreme Court justice this past week issued an order giving the Attorney General until the end of next Thursday, the 14th, to respond. Yellowstone Public Radio reached out to both attorneys. In an email, a spokesperson with Attorney General Austin Knutson says, quote, "We're not going to discuss our legal strategy in the media. You'll find out when we file our response," unquote. Cromwell's legal representative says in an email that Cromwell looks forward to the Attorney General's response and the court's decision. The Wyoming GOP has voted to defy a state law that prohibits endorsing candidates before primary elections. Statewide candidates are divided on whether to accept such endorsements. Some agree with the party's decision, while others oppose breaking election law. Some are taking a wait-and-see approach. They're focusing on voter engagement. The party argues it's a private organization. It cites a 1989 Supreme Court ruling supporting political endorsements. The new bylaws establish a process for vetting candidates based on loyalty and eligibility. The new bylaws are widely expected to spark lawsuits, while the Wyoming Republican Party has said it plans to file its own legal challenge against the state. Federal officials say more than 4 million Americans have lost food assistance through the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, over the past year. That's prompting pleas for Wyoming residents to help if they can. Eric Galatas with Wyoming News Service has more.
The U.S. Agriculture Secretary told Fox Business last week the reduction in benefits is due to a fraud crackdown. As food banks face new strains on their services, they're asking neighbors to step in. Mark Weslar with the Food Bank of the Rockies says there's been a big spike in demand. He notes 1 in 6 Wyomingites and 1 in 5 children don't know where their next meal will come from.
People from all walks of life are struggling to make ends meet, especially with gas being what it is. Food, clothes, everything seems astronomically expensive now, and folks are having to make hard choices.
According to the government's own data, fraud accounts for just 1% of the SNAP program. The vast majority of people lost SNAP benefits after the passage of the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, which created additional work requirements and other restrictions. The Republican signature tax and spending law aims to cut SNAP funding by 20%, or $186 billion over the next decade. I'm Eric Galatas.
This week, most abortions in Wyoming will be banned after viability. That's around 23 to 24 weeks when a fetus may be able to survive outside the uterus. Federal data show only about 1% of abortions happen after this time, and Jackson-based OBGYN Giovanna Anthony says Wyoming providers already don't typically give abortions this late in a pregnancy. Those cases are usually sent out of state.
That particular provision really does not affect us here on the ground very much.
The viability ban was triggered when a court temporarily blocked a new state law banning abortion at about 6 weeks. It reverts Wyoming's restrictions to before Roe v. Wade was overturned. The provision includes exceptions to, quote, preserve a woman from imminent peril, unquote. A Billings judge has dismissed a challenge to the 2024 constitutional initiative that enshrined abortion access in Montana's constitution. The Montana Life Defense Fund and two plaintiffs argued the ballot proposal's text was deficient and its voter approval should be void. A Yellowstone County District Court disagreed, concluding the proposal met all legal requirements. The constitutional amendment protecting access to abortion in Montana stands. And we'll take a little pat on the back this week. The E.B. Craney Awards are named in memory of Montana broadcast pioneer Ed Craney. The EBs recognize excellence in local news, production, promotion, and public service. The awards are presented annually during the Montana Broadcasters Association Convention, June 6th in Bozeman. YPR is proud to report we have two finalists in the 2026 EBs. Sarah Brown is a finalist in Non-Commercial Radio Program of the Year for her program Field Days. Our reporter, Kayla DeRoche, is also a finalist. She's in the Radio News Story category for her story, Bat Tourism Rallies Around Conservation in Montana. Kayla had a couple of stories this week. We picked two, both on issues critical to many lives in the region. Kayla started the week with this report on indigenous activists reacting to news that President Donald Trump issued a presidential border crossing permit for the Bridger Pipeline in north-central Montana.
The Bridger Pipeline would start in Phillips County, Montana, at the Canadian border, and carry Alberta oil sands down through eastern Montana. Fort Peck Assiniboine tribal member and Wolf Point City Councilman Lance Forstar says he fought for years against the Keystone XL pipeline.
This was all kind of new to me. I was hoping that it wasn't real and that this was just a rumor.
Indigenous activists and environmental groups have been rallying around the public comment period for the Bridger Pipeline's environmental analysis. Forstar says he's disappointed by the presidential approval, but not surprised.
That sinking feeling didn't happen this time.
A spokesperson with developer Bridger Pipeline says construction is slated to begin in fall 2027. The pipeline still needs several permits to go ahead. In Billings, I'm Kayla DeRoche.
Kayla also filed this story on researchers growing chicken organs in a lab in Bozeman to better understand avian flu, a contagious and deadly disease in poultry.
Montana State University began project research earlier this year with a $1.9 million grant through the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Professor Emma Loveday says biologists are developing miniature organs from chicken digestive tracts to study avian flu.
We're really looking to try and identify ways where we can suppress infection within these cells, in hopes that suppressing infection will reduce the amount of virus being produced overall within the chicken and thereby limiting spread during an outbreak.
There is no cure for avian flu in poultry, and agricultural operations must cull their entire flock to control the virus. Loveday says researchers are hoping what they discover will support the development of antivirals or feed additives. She says using lab-grown organs makes it easier to get the cells and to limit experimentation on animals. The USDA grant ends in 2029. In Billings, I'm Kayla DeRoche.
Public education in Montana suffered as voters turned down levies. Local voters turned down by a large margin the Billings School District requests for additional funding for the elementary and high schools in the city. Both the elementary and high school levies were voted down by 61% of the voters in Tuesday's election, according to unofficial results from Yellowstone County Election Office. The school district's mill levy requests were to cover operational costs for both the city's elementary and high schools. Yellowstone County's election office reports voter turnout at just under 38%. Voters in western and central Montana, in all but a handful of communities, soundly defeated their public schools' requests to help pay for big expenses. Montana Public Radio's Austin Amestoy rounds up Tuesday's levy election results.
Western Montana's urban schools fared much better than their rural counterparts in school levy elections. Voters in Missoula, Butte, and Bozeman passed most funding requests on the ballot. The tax revenue will help pay for teacher salaries, technology needs, and safety upgrades. Many small schools in rural areas will be forced to tighten their belts after voters rejected levies, but so will Helena Public Schools, one of the state's largest districts. It's been grappling with a budgetary imbalance for years, driven by declining enrollment and rising expenses like insurance, tech, and inflation.
We have a system of school funding that's broken.
Superintendent Rex Welts said the state's rules for public school funding constantly force districts and their taxpayers to choose between critical facility upgrades or funding teacher salaries, maintaining technology, or improving safety. Helena voters last year passed a gargantuan school bond that will pay for new schools. But Welts says none of that money can go toward the school's operating budget. Now, he says difficult cuts are on the way.
This cyclic pattern that you described is hard on our community, it's hard on our students, but it's extremely hard on our district staff.
Kalispell voters also defeated all school levies. It's part of a multi-year losing streak for many districts at the ballot box. In Missoula, I'm Austin Amestoy.
Summer water levels at Flathead Lake have lowered in recent years. Big Fork High School journalists talked with business owners and community members about how lake levels impact their town located on the shores of the lake.
Rebecca King is the executive director of the Big Fork Chamber of Commerce.
Fun fact, I took my first job in Big Fork because I lived in Lakeside and I could drive my boat to work. People live in Montana and the Flathead Valley because of the untouched nature, the pristine wilderness, and the lake levels are part of that.
According to King, businesses including restaurants, marinas, and rental companies all rely on visitors who recreate on Flathead Lake and the rivers that feed into it. Lake levels affect many of those businesses.
Tourism drives much of the local economy. King says most of these businesses are locally owned.
We really are fortunate to have very small businesses and a very small business-minded community. I can't think of one business with a storefront in Big Fork that I don't know the owner of, personally. You know, it's not some corporate conglomerate somewhere.
Flathead Lake levels are controlled in part by dams. The Salish-Kananska-Kalispe Dam is owned by the Confederated Salish and Kootenai Tribes. Dam operators influence lake levels by determining how much water spills over the dam and out of the lake. Brian Lipscomb is the chief executive officer of Energy Keepers, the tribal company that has run dam operations since 2015.
I'm the CEO for Energy Keepers, and we, of course, manage the facility Salish-Kananska-Kalispell Hydroelectric Project, and that project controls the top 10 feet of Flathead Lake. So as we use that 1.2 million acre feet of storage in the reservoir to generate electricity, the lake will go up and down depending on hydrologic conditions.
He says operators make decisions that impact lake levels, but the impact is limited.
The trend of warming temperatures and unpredictable weather have made it harder to manage lake levels, and there just hasn't been as much water available to fill the lake.
So this is the yearly volume over the last 30 years. If you look right here, we've just ended three of the worst water supply years in the history of the entire record. And what's important to note is that there's three in a row. Never has that happened when you look back over time.
Lipscomb says the entire system that delivers water to the lake has changed in recent decades.
Over the last 30 years, the region's winter weather has become warmer. That means there's less snow melting off the mountains in the spring and more rain falling in the valley throughout the winter. Lipscomb says that the change is part of why Flathead Lake has been lower in the summer.
Compared to what I experienced as a teenager, and that's 45 years ago now, what I was experiencing and growing up with was a different world than what you all are experiencing and growing up with. But we can figure out and start asking the question of what do we need to do to plan and continue to adjust and be resilient? What's that going to take?
As lake levels fluctuate, businesses are having to shift. An example is Base Camp Big Fork, an outdoor adventure outfitter that leads kayak, paddleboard, and canoe trips. The owner, Mark Shirky, says his business is set up to ensure the receding shoreline isn't a direct threat to its survival.
I would say I'm the guy that's kind of benefited from lower lake levels, and I don't mean that like, sweet, I'm excited, because, you know, it's more that because of the nature of paddle sports, whether the lake is high or low doesn't really impact us.
Restaurants are among the businesses feeling most impacted, especially those like the Sitting Duck, where many customers arrive by boat. For Sitting Duck owner Mike LaPeter, every inch of lost water is potentially a lost customer.
Less boats can dock at the lake on our docks. And then last year, the year it was low, we actually had to have somebody to help people get out of the boats because older people and kids, the level was so low that our docks are at a fixed height. People could barely even get out of their boats to get onto the docks.
For people like LaPeter, changes in the lake can mean changes for their business. Researchers predict these fluctuations will continue. Here's Mark Shirky, the paddle guide, once more.
It is what it is. Like, nature's nature, and there isn't that element of, like, who can we blame for this, right?
In Big Fork, I'm Lily Sophia.
And I'm Emily Wissman. This story was reported by high school students in Anne-Marie Sycon's journalism class at Big Fork High School, in partnership with Montana Media Lab. Student reporters include Emma Ben, Lily Bassett, Trillium Devaney, Lily Sophia, and me, Emily Wissman. Thank you to Big Fork High School, the Hearst Foundation, and the Arthur M. Blank Family Foundation for supporting this project.
Finally, CNN founder and longtime Montana landowner Ted Turner died at the age of 87. According to the Associated Press, Turner passed away Wednesday after struggling with Lewy body dementia for years. The media mogul became known for a slew of TV firsts, like introducing the 24-hour news cycle. Turner was also among the largest landowners in the country and in Montana. Turner owned the over 110,000-acre Flying D Ranch located in southwestern Montana. He advocated for reviving the West's bison herds and also started a restaurant chain serving bison burgers, Ted's Montana Grill. That's the Weekend Worm for this second weekend of May 2026. We'll have another episode of The Worm on Monday. We'll keep the weekend editions coming, too. I'm Carl Lengel. Have a great weekend.
The Worm is a production of Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music composed and recorded by Zach Jones at Rapscallion Recording. Metal Art Call captured by Jay McGowan for the Macaulay Library. More information about The Worm is available at ypradio.org.